everyone. Welcome to Authors on the Air. I'm your host, Pam Stack. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I know you're probably wondering, why in the world are you doing a show in the morning? It is only for my guests. If she wasn't a superstar and so much fun and so brilliant, I would be sleeping. No, that's not true. I'd be reading. I am honored once again to have the brilliant Catherine Coulter with me. We'll be talking today about her book called Enigma. It is another FBI mystery. This is the 20th book in the series. And I'm proud to welcome back to Authors on the Air, Miss Catherine Coulter. Hello, Miss Catherine. How are you today?
Well, hello, Miss Pam. I am just fine. And the five cats, I still can't get over sleeping with five cats. I think that's just wonderful.
Oh,
and JT, the three of us could be there just surrounded by cats.
And Allison Brennan, too. She's a cat girl also.
Allison as well. Yes.
Yep.
But I don't know if we could all fit in a king-size bed.
No, we definitely have to lay them end to end or something. But because I know you're a exactly, I know you're a cat lover too. So, and I'm thrilled for that. Although, you grew up around horses, didn't you?
That's right. In Texas, we kept quarter horses, and I was quite insane because thank heavens that God takes care of children and idiots you're usually one and the same when it comes to when you're young. So, you know, riding bareback all over the place and standing up with a bar. I mean, you know, it was an amazing childhood. And this was in the country, and it was filled with copperhead snakes. But I never got bit, and I ran around all over that property barefoot. So, again, thank you, God, for sparing me and giving me such a great childhood.
I swear to God, you and I are like 6 degrees of separation. When I was growing up, I was the oldest and the only girl. And my father never quite knew what to do with me. So he took me horseback riding at a very young age. And so that was my love when I was growing up. And interestingly enough, speaking of quarter horses, we lived right down the street from Hialeah Racetrack, which was famous for its quarter horse racing. So.
Yes.
You know, we are connected in some way, Catherine. I'm sure of it, even if it was in a previous crazy life. You went to the opposite coast to go to college, and now you're on the West Coast. So you've kind of moved around a little bit, but in between, you were a speechwriter for Wall Street, weren't you?
Yes, yes, I was.
How did that come about?
Well, very quickly, do you know how most of the time you have to make a decision about what you want to do, and then later you might think, well, what if I'd done the other thing instead?
Right.
I think that happens to everybody. And I was so incredibly lucky because I had a master's degree in French. And so I was offered at the same time an assistant professorship at King College in New Jersey, and a job writing speeches for the president of an actuarial company on Wall Street. So I got the chance to really figure out what I wanted to do. And my father had been after he retired, then he became a professor at University of Texas. And in fact, he built a low-speed wind tunnel. He was an aerodynamic engineer. And I'll never forget, he told me, he said, my dear, he said, the biggest snake pit I have ever worked in my life is academia. He said,
wow.
He said, you would get crushed and you would be miserable because the politics just grind you under. And he said, there is no mercy. So it wasn't really too hard. I went to Wall Street and had a ball.
So that's how that came about. Did you have a love of writing before you went to Wall Street? I mean, did you always think, I want to write something anyway?
No. It's just that from my earliest memory, writing was always very easy. I was that obnoxious kid who could write a paper the night before and get an A+. You know, everybody's good at something, and I sucked at math and algebra, but I could write.
Right.
And you know, and in college you write really bad poetry. That's an assignment. You have
absolutely
to do that. It's in our
absolutely
genes. But it wasn't until I was actually working on Wall Street and happened to be, my husband and I were in, that was a different book. Oh, Lord. No, I was reading, he was in medical school at Presbyterian in New York City, and I was reading probably 15, 20 books a week, because I never saw him. And then one night I was reading a book and I threw it across the room and said, I can do better. And I told my husband, he said, let's go for it. And the next weekend, he took off, and we plotted together the first and last book, and that was The Autumn Countess. And then, you know, it took about a year to write, and thank God I was smart enough to realize that this was a huge undertaking and to reduce the unknowns. I always loved Georgia Heyer. I loved the Regency romances she wrote because she started the genre. And
right.
Plus, my second master's degree was in early European 19th century history, so I knew the Regency period backwards and forwards. So I eliminated those unknowns right there. And then it was a matter of writing. And
it's amazing to me that you were this historical romance writer in the Regency period, because I didn't know that about you, although I knew that you had written romance. I did not know it was Regency. You wrote like 10 or 15 books in that genre, didn't you?
I think there were six, maybe six or seven, and then I switched over to the long historicals.
Right.
And again, you know, I'm a history buff, so it was always really, really fun. And most of the long historicals are also in the Regency period. And then I got bored with that and went back to medieval times. I know everything about England between 1270 and 1280. Nothing else but that.
Wow.
And then I went back to Viking, and I learned all about the Vikings. So it's just fun. It's just been fun. And then what happened is, and this is what I was going to tell you before, I was in Europe and this entire plot came into my mind, and it was a contemporary, and it was a suspense, it was a romantic suspense as opposed to a suspense. That is, you still
right
had the woman in peril, and it was the relationship in the middle, and then all the
sure
excitement and mystery around that. It wasn't
around
the suspense
it, sure,
with the conundrum in the middle. You know the difference.
Right.
And so
right.
I wrote it. And I remember at the time I was finishing the third book of a historical trilogy. And so I think this could happen one time in an author's career. I wrote that book in 6 weeks, which I've never done in my life, and it was about 110,000 words, to make time for myself to write this new contemporary. I did not say a word to anybody, and I did not turn in the historical until its due date, because then they could have said, wah, 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 wah. So then when I sent them the contemporary, they didn't know what to do. And they published it in hardcover, and this was my very first hardcover. It was called False Tenses, and it did very well, and then things began to change. Not really. I take that back. They really didn't. I'd write a historical and then a contemporary, and then Putnam. You probably remember Phyllis Grant, the
yes
most.
Yes.
Yes. The
yes
best. One of the best publishers in the entire universe.
Yep.
And she got me over to Putnam to write historical romances. And so I wrote three trilogies in 4 years. That's 9 books. And I was just burned to my toes. And that's when I went back to Texas for a reunion. And my sister just, without preamble, she walked up to me and she said, have you ever heard of this little town on the coast of Oregon called The Cove. They make the world's greatest ice cream, and bad stuff happens. So that was The
Cove.
My God. That was the first book in the FBI series, but it wasn't a series then. It was just a standalone book. And JT once told me, she said, a series until book four, and she was right. It took until The Edge, and then I said, whoa, this is a freaking series. And
there you
so that's
go.
How that came about. And so
well,
then I was
I
writing a
ask...
historical romance and then FBI because they're two such disparate genres.
Yes.
And by
yes.
changing back and forth, you keep your brain unconstipated. So
that's a great
worked,
way to say it.
That worked,
so
that
I have
worked
a
very well for a long time.
So you turn in this contemporary after doing these historicals, and they're kind of stunned by that. Don't you consider it fortuitous that they went ahead and published? Because sometimes writers get pigeonholed not of their own accord because the publisher says, you're doing so well, I don't want you to change, and so on. Would you have fought hard to make the change, Catherine, do you think?
To be perfectly honest, Pam, such a thing never even occurred to me.
Really?
Of course they were going to do it, of course. With The Cove, that was a total, I told them I wanted to write this contemporary. And Putnam, being very smart, and I understand, if it ain't broken, don't fix it. But
sure.
I just dug in my heels, and I said, no, I'm burned out, I want this. And then they wanted to put it in hardcover, and I said, no way. I said, failure is fine, but you don't want to fail in hardcover. So they brought
You're
it out
so
in
funny.
Paperback, and it just did amazingly, superbly well. And then they looked at me, and they said, well, when's the next one? What? And,
that's so funny.
I lie to you not. This voice in the back of my head said, Catherine, what about me? And it was Dylan Savage. And he'd appeared in like the last third of the book as the FBI character's partner
right.
back in Washington. And still the second book was Sherlock's book. And then the third book was basically about Judge Ramsey Hunt. And then the fourth book, it became a series, like JT said it would.
That's so funny. And
so,
yet
so,
you also...
No, to be honest, I've always just done what I wanted and never given any thought. And the trick is, I think there are several tricks. First of all, you've got to pray that what you write, people want to read, and enough people read it to make the publisher keep you on, to earn them enough money to keep
yes,
you on.
Yes, yes. Sure, that makes sense.
And then, yeah, and so... I was very lucky. And the second thing that is, I think, super, super critical is you get to pick your due dates. If you set a date and you make a promise, for heaven's sake, you do it. You
right.
do it. I don't. The only thing to stop you from doing it is your death.
Is
and
you, exactly.
so they would schedule my books out before they even knew what they were. And
wow.
I was told by my editor, no, I was told by the publisher, at Simon & Schuster, where I'm at now, I had told her I heard that 60% of contract authors were late on their books. And she said, oh, honey. She said, oh, no, it's closer to 90%. So
wow.
it's super, super important to keep your word on that, which means discipline, of course. So
well,
they,
I bet it is.
And they trusted me.
That's kind of like doing a good job where no matter where you go and are employed, you know, there are expectations. You go to work on time, you leave on time, you stay at your desk and you work or whatever it is you happen to do. So I can understand why you're saying that. Your obligation is to get words on a paper and to give it to someone on a certain time frame.
Yeah.
The time to dissuade that or argue with that is before you write the book and make the commitment. So, you know, it makes sense to me. I have to tell you that I, after all of these books, and I don't think people know this about you, but you have 80 books under your belt. 82.
Yes. Enigma's number 21.
Okay.
Enigma is number 21, and Paradox is coming out July 31st, and it's number 22.
It's stunning to me, Catherine, that you're so young. You're not even old enough to have babies, and you've written 80 books.
I know, it's amazing. It's amazing.
It is. How did you do that?
I just bought my first bra, okay?
There you go. You started writing when you were 10.
I think it was 9 and a half, but I didn't get published till 11. Okay.
There you go.
Right.
So, and now you write a couple, 3 books a year, and not only did you do the historicals, you have the FBI, and then you have the little series that you do with J.T. Ellison, and that's also a ton of fun, because that's a Brit in the FBI book, and that's number 4 there. So she's right, you have a series of yours, you have a couple series of yours, and then you have a series with J.T. Ellison, who it's been a beautiful thing.
Yes.
Are you having fun still? I mean, really, are you having fun?
I wouldn't change a thing. And my promise is, you know, I will croak over the keyboard. I don't want to stop. I really, really don't. I mean, we go on vacation, and if it's more than 9 days, I'm nearly jumping out of my skin. And I can't help it, you know, so my husband just looks at me and wants to smack me. But it's simply the way I am, and, you know, why change it, really, because it's wonderful.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, well, you know, I'm slowing down a little bit, so I only do one FBI a year, and then JT and I do one Brit book a year. And people wanted the historical romances, but I simply couldn't do a second one. You know, I couldn't write another one and make it 2 books a year. So I'm writing novellas, and I'm finishing up the third one, and it's with Grayson Sherbrooke back in 1841. And he's part of the Sherbrooke series, which was 11 books and the most beloved series I ever did. So trying, you know, and again, it gets your brain on a different track. And right now I'm in ancient Egypt. It's wonderful.
Have you ever wanted to write in a different genre, though? You've done historical romance and romantic suspense. Now you're doing thrillers. Do you have an interest in trying another genre, Catherine?
Like what? Science fiction?
Maybe.
That's about
or
the only
horror.
One left.
Horror? You know?
I'm not a horror girl.
And
I'm not a girl in Cabin Tin Girl.
Okay, well, that's true. Would you consider women's fiction?
No. No.
It's just
and
not there for
what,
you.
That's what the trade paperback is aimed at, the readers of women's fiction. So that's why, again, I'm an experiment with the trade of Enigma. So we will see. We will see if they respond to it. No, I do not read women's fiction. I do not like it. I do not like chick flicks. I don't go to them.
You're so funny.
Probably we're also different, you know. But I just don't like them.
Well, that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. I want to ask you, because I think you're always so honest whenever we talk. What is the best thing about being a writer? Really, the best thing about being a writer?
The best thing about being... Well, there are probably 2 things.
Okay.
One is you can be an asshole, but it doesn't matter because you're the boss.
Right.
And so who cares? And
right.
Secondly, you never know what's going to be in the mailbox. And there's all... It could be a sale to Israel, a sale to Latvia... You know, an offer for an option on a book for a movie or a TV. You never know. So there's always excitement when the mail comes. If there's a new book coming out and you haven't seen it yet, it could come today. So that's always a wonderful up. You never, never know. And if that fails, there could be the Sundance or Anthropology catalog.
Right. So, what's the worst thing? I mean, what part really sucks about being a published author?
What part really sucks?
Yeah.
it's not that it sucks. It's just that I'm a fantastic editor of other people's work. But with the FBI, they are so complex. And there are so many loose ends flying off in all directions that even when I am super, super careful, I cannot edit it to perfection. And so that's a bit frustrating, but I have my editor husband from hell. And he happens to be incredible at it. And, you know, he's absolutely incredible at it, but I've kind of feel a little bit like a failure because I can't take that final step, but he takes it for me. And the editors love to get my books because they don't have to do anything, you know?
Hey, do you ever get fan mail from people who say, oh, you got this wrong, like on gun? Or So how do you respond to stuff like that?
Oh, I'm very grateful. And I said, tell me. Give me exact information on this. Thank you. And I will send them a copy of the book when it comes out with the changes. No, I'm very grateful for that. Now, some people are just jerks, and you want to tell them,
right.
You know, go get a life, idiot. Go get a frickin' life. But you don't. You're just like, thank you. I'm sorry you didn't like this. Go.
Right.
And never mind. I can't say that on the air.
Well, you actually can, but don't. I don't care. I don't care if you say it. So I want to talk about, first of all, you've got Paradox coming out, which I'm really excited to read that one. Enigma is wonderful. I love it. You've also got the fifth book in the Brit in the FBI called The Sixth Day. That one comes out with JT in April. Your next historical comes out when?
I don't have a historical. I will have a novella. It will come out in ebook only, I'd say in a couple of months. And this is through my agent, Robert Gottlieb at Trident. They have a wonderful digital division. Those people are brilliant. Specifically,
they are
Nicole Robson is I would kill for her. And what happened is that this is now the third one, and people say, well, why can't it be in paperback? Why does it have to be ebook? Well, a publisher can't publish a 20,000-word novella. You can't do that.
And not sell it. It doesn't make any sense, yeah.
No, it doesn't.
I understand.
So I mentioned to my publisher at the Savannah Book Festival a couple of weeks ago, I said, would you guys be interested in publishing this in paper if there are three of them? I said it would make about 60,000 words. And she said, oh, yeah, not a problem. So,
there you go.
When this is done, then we'll set it up. But it's only 60,000 words. But then they could use big print, which I like.
Right. And also, that's a book. I mean, with short attention span these days, most people will not read more than 300 words. I want a meaty story. I don't care how long it is. I'll read it, you know, even if it's 1,000 words or something. I have no problem with it. Just make it a good, well-written story with lots of action. And yours always deliver, Catherine Coulter. Tell everyone where they can find you on the webs and if you're making any appearances.
Okay, well, I just returned from the Savannah Book Festival, which was incredible. And, in fact, you should consider going there, Pam. It was wonderful.
That's in February, right?
Yes. Yes, it was the 17th and 16th and 17th.
Right.
What was I saying? I'm sorry, I forgot.
Events. That's okay.
Oh, what else other than events?
Are you doing Tucson?
No, I will not be doing Tucson. I have a lot of other obligations this year that do not involve events. And, in fact, I've cut down to two a year. So I'll be doing something local, a book festival in the area. It's the second event for the year. So that's really all in terms of personal appearances for the year. You know.
And where can everybody find you on the web? Tell everybody where you are.
CatherineCoulter.com is my website, and please come and sign up for my monthly newsletter. It's very funny, I hope.
It is.
Also,
so fun.
Face, facebook.com/
right.
Catherine Coulter Books, all one word. I post every day, and I answer all the comments. And right now there is the super neatest video advertising Enigma. So go there, go to my Facebook page. I pinned it so you can watch it. It is fantastic. The one for the 6 day I'll be putting up in a couple of weeks. It's even better. And then Paradox is the best. They should be on TV, and the publisher says, sorry, it's too expensive. Big sigh. Big sigh. But come and see
me. I'll make sure to – I'll put them on my pages, too.
I appreciate that. That'd be good.
Catherine, I love you. I just have the best time talking to you, the most authentic person I know. You just tell it like it is. And so thank you so much. Will you come back again?
I would love to. We can talk about Paradox, because that is a super fun book.
Let's do that. Let's make a plan. I'll drop you an email. I'll talk to your publicist. And also, think about who you want to interview and come back and take the microphone to me, and I'll be your tech. How about that?
I love it.
Okay.
Thanks, Pam.
That would be a fun show. Thanks, Catherine. Have a great day. I look forward to talking to you again soon, hon. Okay. Thank
okay.
you.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. And that's our show for today. Thank you for being with me. And thank you, Mom and Dad. I'll see you next week.